Let's go in-depth on Iowa State with the Des Moines Register.
It's time
for Cyclone Insider on 1460 KXNO.
Hello and welcome to the Cyclone Insider Radio Hour from the Des Moines Register on 106.3 FM and 1460 KXNO. I'm Travis Hines, he's Randy Peterson, and we are coming to you from lovely Orlando, site of the Cheez-It Bowl, where Iowa State and Clemson will do battle at the Camping World Stadium on Wednesday. Randy, you've been down in Orlando for like a month now, I think it seems like. I've been down here for 2 days. The team's been here since, what, Christmas Day?
Mm-hmm.
I think they're ready to play some football at this point. They've seen as much of Orlando. They've done the amusement parks. They've done the media obligations. I think they're ready to play some football.
Yeah, I do too, and I'm ready to watch some football too. You know, obviously the way things are going in this world, fingers crossed if there's a game, and I don't want to get anybody all crazy. We've not heard anything otherwise. Both coaches this morning emphasized that Campbell said his team's in great shape. Dabo said that they've got three or something like that, either with COVID or in the protocol, including a starting receiver. So, I think we're all ready to just play football for one more time.
Yeah, I was kind of struck by a moment in the press conference this morning where Dabo Swinney was asked about, you know, the state of his program, and I think he was a little miffed by the question after winning two national titles and going to six straight playoffs, that 1-9-3 season, and it's like, oh, what's wrong with Clemson? But it reminded me back of Campbell, I think, having something similar after the TCU game, maybe a little bit miffed about the way that this Iowa State season has been received after opening the year ranked in the top 10, but finishing 7-5. And it just struck me that while no one's going to be comparing Clemson and Iowa State football in terms of where they are as programs, I think it's interesting that they're both looking at what's next. You know, after having this incredible run for both of them at different levels, but what comes next? And I think for Iowa State, yeah, the Cheez-It Bowl against Clemson will be whatever. It'll be the swan song for all these seniors. It'll be an opportunity for some of the younger players to get some snaps. But really, you're looking at 2022. What does that look like for Iowa State? I think it looks like a solid team, but certainly more questions than we've really probably seen at Iowa State football in, what, 3 years? I mean, going into that 2018 season was probably the last time they'll have as many questions as they will this year, whether it's at quarterback, at running back, across the line, at wide receiver behind Xavier Hutchinson, tight end. And then go flip side, what do they do at linebacker? What's the defensive line look like? What's the safety position look like? There's a lot of questions facing this Iowa State football team when they leave Orlando on Thursday morning.
Yeah, and I would say for sure the last 2 years, you're very right.
But even remember back, Randy, heading into that 2019 season, everybody was really excited that was going to be a breakthrough year.
And it was.
To a degree, not to the degree not people to the were degree hoping to, for.
But it was a breakthrough. Yeah. But it was a breakthrough year to that point. Wasn't that Alamo Bowl year or something like that?
That was the Camping World Bowl.
That was the Camping World Bowl. Yeah, too. Okay. Yeah, it was a Camping Bowl because last year was a Fiesta. Yeah. Alamo Camping Fiesta. And here. So it's been a logical progression. Maybe not camping to here, but it's been somewhat of a logical progression. But yeah, there are, you're right, there's a lot of questions about next season. There's at positions where we haven't had questions in the past. Hunter Deckers, how will Hunter Deckers play? Who's going to back up?
Is it Hunter Deckers' job?
Is it Hunter Deckers' job?
I got to think he's got to win it in the spring and in the fall. You know, is Aiden Bowman the guy that's going to push him? Are they going to bring in transfer quarterback to compete for the job or to compete for the number two job? There's just a lot of questions there. I mean, I don't know that we should presume anything. I know we know that they really like Deckers, but I think they like competition too.
I think if Aiden Bowman was going to be in the hunt, he would be he'd be pushing him as of now. And I know you and I are both ingrained not to follow depth charts, but his name's not even on the depth chart anymore. They just list two quarterbacks.
What's a depth chart?
Hey, boom. smart aleck. But yeah, there are a ton of questions, and I'm glad you mentioned the linebackers. I mean, because what's going on there? But in one of the differences is from 2 years ago, let's say, is that we think there's quality depth. You know, despite the fact there's 12 kids in the portal, we think there's quality depth. Sure, that portal took some of that depth away, but they've been playing a lot of guys this year, which is a good thing. And at the running back position, maybe they did that on purpose. Maybe they've got both running backs at the 4-game max to maintain their red shirt because they wanted to, and they knew Breece Hall was going to turn pro. I mean, we all knew that.
They didn't know he was going to opt out.
I guess.
I mean, if they're playing in the Sugar Bowl, I don't think Breece.
No, he doesn't. But turn that thing around into a positive. Then with the two freshman running backs, they it splits up their class, which is good. So yeah, I mean, there are key positions that really need looking at, and I'm kind of curious about the offensive line as well.
I'm very curious.
We've not seen that offensive line. Offensive line started out decent, but we've not seen it progress. We've not seen it progress a ton over the years, over the last couple seasons, either. So I'm just kind of curious to see what's going on there. And they played a lot of guys in the offensive line. Do not get me wrong, but it's going to be interesting to see how they manage that going forward. Also,
yeah, I think that'll be maybe the number one area obviously quarterback and running back are going to generate a lot of interest, but I think holistically that offensive line is maybe the most intriguing because that's always been the laggard under Campbell. That offensive line has never been a position group where you would rank it among the best at Iowa State, right? I mean, is that fair to say?
Oh, that's 100%.
That's not even to say. I'm not even comparing them to other programs. Just within the Iowa State program, that has been the position group that has lagged for whatever reason. And can they figure out why that is? I mean, I think, you know, a lot of people draw comparisons between Matt Campbell and Kirk Ferentz, and I think rightly so, to the beginning of their tenures. And the way that Ferentz built it over there was with the offensive line. I mean, how many guys have they put in the first round of the NFL draft? And that's just been the one area that seems like Campbell cannot, find footing for there. And I don't know if it's skill. I don't know if it's technique. I don't know if it's physicality. I mean, you look at, Iowa State does not have imposing physical players at those tackle positions. You know, it's not a 6'7", 350-pounder, that can get out and run. So can they find those physical players more, or is it a scheme or technique issue? I mean, that'll be, I think, one of the subplots of the offseason and heading into next season.
Yeah, and there's not a whole lot of those subplots like that in that respect, because I mean, the elephant in the room is, if they do overhaul the offensive line, where does it start? Does it start at the top? Does it deal with does it go with recruiting? Where's that? What's that look like? And I guess we just have to wait and see what that is. But that's a huge area of concern going into next year. It's a huge area of concern going into this game, also because of Clemson's defense. Clemson's defense gives up 15 points a game. That's number two or number three in the country. How the hell is Iowa State going to score on that without Breece?
Their backup running back.
Yeah, that boom. Yeah, there you go. So that's why I think Brock's going to throw for 400 yards and I'm facetious there, maybe, but
unless it happens, as you were predicting.
But yeah, well, but I'm getting way off. I'm getting way off the topic here. Yeah, you're catching my cold. I'm getting way off the topic here. But Pittsburgh Boston College, and somebody else passed for well over 300 yards against Clemson this year. So I guess it's possible if you keep him upright, because Clemson likes to sack a little bit also. But yeah, the offensive line, I don't know. I mean, I don't even know who's coming back there, to be honest with you. I really don't. I mean, I think all those guys have Maybe Trevor doesn't have any time left. I don't know that for sure.
No, I think he's just a junior. Does Foster? I think he's in his sixth
Foster's
year.
In his sixth year.
Yeah. Newell, I think, is fourth or fifth.
Yeah.
So it's hard to keep track of it.
It is with the with that you know, the COVID year. It's terribly hard to keep track of. But the quarterback's going to be intriguing. And do they have faith in Hunter Deckers? Are they going to go to the portal? Are they going to get a John Kohler type guy? Are they going to get? I don't know. It's just a matter of what's out there. And I don't know. There's a lot of guys in the portal, and everybody in the portal is not going to find a job. Trust me. And I don't know whether they'll
find an academic institution. You mean?
And all those guys in the portal aren't going to find a job. And, I don't know. And I figure the quarterback's been picked over already, but maybe there'll be another round of quarterbacks that go into the free agency.
Yeah, I mean, the transfer portal is definitely a living entity that's going to be.
And I hope I wish it was a dead entity, but.
It's not, and I don't think it will be ever again, or at least not in the way that it was previously. It's going to be a place that'll give and take, as Iowa State is seeing. Still a long way to go there. When you look at this game on Wednesday, I mean, can Iowa State score enough? I mean, I think, is that the determining factor, do you think?
Yeah, it is. And that's why I say Brock's got to have a huge game. But look at the Clemson defensive backs. They're all 6 foot. That'd be 6 foot zero. And Iowa State's got receivers who are tall. Xavier Hutchinson's tall. If Iowa State gets in the red zone, jump ball pass to Chase or Charlie at 6'7" and 6'6", yeah, I'd put money on that one. It's just a matter of keeping. This is going to be the cliche of the day: keeping the chains moving, while also, which includes success on third and short, which goes right to Jairal Brock, because that was his bread and butter, even before Brees left. So they've got Jairal on third and short will be huge, and the mismatches that the receivers can make, and as far as height is concerned against the secondary. So I don't know. I don't know whether Clemson can score though. That's another thing too. Regardless, what are we saying? It's going to be a low scoring game. Yeah, Iowa State can score enough. I think Iowa State can.
The one thing that would concern me is if they're unable to run the ball. And I think it will be difficult. Even with Brees Hall, it was going to be difficult to run the ball against this Clemson defense. If they're unable to run the ball and have to become a one-dimensional offense. We've seen Iowa State be successful in that before. You think back to like the Texas Tech game. I think that is you're really rolling the dice there. And can you protect Brock Purdy against this Clemson defense? Because we saw in the Oklahoma game, they could not protect Brock Purdy. And if you're throwing it, 35, 40 times on Wednesday against this Clemson team, can you protect well enough for 60 minutes to keep Purdy healthy? I mean, again, we saw in that Oklahoma game him take some nasty shots that cost him, a quarter and a half of football?
Mm-hmm.
Can you keep him healthy? Can you keep him upright and give him enough time to deliver the ball downfield? And again, Iowa State has its main targets in Xavier Hutchinson and Charlie Kohler. They have Jalen Noll. They have Chase Allen. But they lost some depth in that wide receiver room from the portal. So do you need that depth? I don't know. They haven't really needed it this year. You relying on Hutchinson, Noll, and the tight ends has been good enough. But do you need that third or fourth wide receiver this time around? Especially because, I mean, we'll see Jairal. We haven't seen enough of it this year. But Brees Hall was a good pass catcher out of the backfield. So what does the passing game look like now when you've kind of reconfigured your offense and you've got an offensive line that I would be concerned about being able to protect the quarterback?
And what's it look like with Xavier Hutchinson coming off of some kind of a hand procedure for a thumb? We don't even know if he's going to play. Campbell said, whatever day that was, when they got here on the 25th, that everybody he's of the belief that everybody will play, other than Brees and the portal guys.
Which is not to be taken as gospel.
Exactly. 100%. You're right. We've seen that. And that's not just Campbell. It's every coach has said.
And but, I will give him credit. He's been, it's only been by like a degree or two, but he has been a degree or two more transparent about injuries this year than previous years.
Okay. Yeah. No, he has. But we have to ask about him.
Yeah.
We had to ask about Xavier Hutchinson, for example. And that's our job. But yeah, we'll see. But as we've since learned, he played the last two or three games with a thumb situation. So maybe he'll be fine. He's coming back. Obviously, he's coming back.
We saw him
riding a scooter around Orlando the other day. Yes. That was interesting. So
I didn't see a thumb cast or anything either.
I didn't either. The only bad thing I saw was a bad thing. The only thing I saw that raised a little bit of a red flag was Colin Newell wearing a boot on his right foot. But we learned from somebody from Iowa State that he does that all the time.
We knew that he'd been banged up.
And wearing a boot's not a big deal.
It's not what it used to be.
No,
it's
not at all.
It's more common thing.
Right. Yeah, it's. I think Iowa State's got enough receivers to play on. God, I'm going to say Saturday to play on Wednesday. I guess, but you're right. Keeping Brock upright is going to be a situation. But as we all know, Brock's gotten gotten significantly smarter in that respect. Also, instead of taking a sack, he'll throw it away, which earlier in his career he would just take a sack. Well,
Throw it backwards to TCU.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he'll still take risks.
He's definitely taken fewer this year.
Right, exactly. Right. So, keep Brock upright, and Iowa State's got a shot.
Does a win mean anything in terms of how you view this season for Iowa State, or win or a loss? Does the outcome change how this season is perceived when you look back on it in 5-10 years?
No, not at all.
Win or lose?
Win or lose. You're right. That's because it's not like Iowa State's playing, I don't know. When Iowa State played Notre Dame, okay? Let me turn this around. Which opponent has more stature? Clemson or Notre Dame?
Clemson.
Boom. Okay. Yes. Six straight national championship games, two titles. Yes. An Iowa State victory, as much as Clemson's changed from the championship, from the playoff team last year, as much as Clemson changed, it's still Clemson. It is still Clemson. They're still six-time straight college football playoff. If you beat them, yes, that's a huge feather in Iowa State's cap. It's a huge advantage for the program. You can say, hey, we beat Clemson, if you're an Iowa State fan, that's big out there on the recruiting trail. That's huge. Or even if you lose against Clemson, you could say you've lost against one of the blue bloods. Clemson certainly is a blue blood. You've lost against one of the blue bloods, unless you get blown out. But getting to your point, is eight and five better than what would it be? 7-6. And of course it is. But it's not a disgrace to lose against Clemson either.
No, I mean, I think a win can give you two things. One, it can give you maybe a signature win that you didn't have. Like you said, a feather in your cap about, hey, they beat Clemson the six-time playoff. The other thing that I could see Iowa State fans talking about after is it makes you wonder more about what if. And we heard Dabo say it today. Mm-hmm. Iowa State's a few plays away from being in the playoff. And they really are. I mean, at least having an opportunity to going into the Big 12 championship game. And you lose four games, three of them by a score. Or excuse me, you lose five games, four of them by one score. And in three of those games, you had the football late with a chance to win or tie. And the other one, you lost on a 62-yard field goal. So if you beat a team like Clemson, has it reinforced the what if? I don't know. I think I would tend to think it would be viewed at more as a badge of honor that you beat the two-time national champ. If you lose, I agree with you. It probably doesn't change your perception of this season, but 7-6 is not when you started the year in the top 10, that's a tough pill to swallow.
I agree 100%. You're right. It's if Iowa State gets blown out, then it's going to be you're going to look back on it and say this was a disappointing season. You may look back on that anyway and say that.
Yeah, and we've seen this bowl and this site be the site of change for an Iowa State program after a blowout loss. But I think we both tend to think that that's probably not the way things go on Wednesday. Cheez-It Bowl, 4:45, ESPN, Iowa State and Clemson. And it's arguably only the second biggest game for Iowa State athletics this week, as the number 8 men's basketball program hosts undefeated number 1 Baylor on Saturday. When we come back on the Cyclone Insider Radio Hour, we will talk about that top 10 matchup inside Hilton Coliseum.
Everything you need to know about Iowa State, it's Cyclone Insider with the Des Moines Register on 1460 KXNO.
Welcome back to the Cyclone Insider Radio Hour from the Des Moines Register on 106.3 FM and 1460 KXNO. Travis Hines and Randy Peterson here talking all things Iowa State athletics. If you missed our discussion about the Cheez-It Bowl, be sure to check out the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. But as we alluded to coming into the break, Iowa State men's basketball, undefeated and ranked 8th in the country, will welcome Baylor, reigning national champion, number 1 undefeated, into Hilton Coliseum at 1 o'clock on Saturday to what Randy, I think, is easily the biggest game at Hilton Coliseum in 5 years, at least.
2014. What? No, yes.
At least it's 5 years?
It's the first top 10 game in Baylor in Ames since 2014, I believe, when Iowa State played number 9. When Iowa State played Baylor, it was Iowa State Baylor. Who'd have thunk? Who'd have thought we'd even be...
Sure as hell not me.
My gosh. I mean, I thought we'd be talking about Iowa State, you know, maybe having 3 wins, 4 wins, 5 wins going into the Big 12. Probably more than that. But at least not having a dozen straight wins going into the Big 12. This has been remarkable. And it's not a fluke. I really don't think it's a fluke. They're winning these games with defense. They've proven... To your point that you've made before, they've beaten 5 big-time opponents, but those big-time opponents aren't playing great basketball this year. But nonetheless, this is a 2-22 Iowa State, so Hilton will be rocking on Saturday. And you say the students won't be there, but it'll still be rocking. It's sold out. I mean, so it'll be fun. It'll be a nice change of pace from being here. Trust me.
You're not having fun in Orlando?
I'm not saying that. I'm just ready to...
It's going
to
be cold.
I get... Yeah. Oh, really?
I think? I can take the 85-degree weather.
You think it's going to be cold?
A couple more days.
Yeah. I mean, I get... I'm ready to... After tomorrow, I'm ready to move on to a different sport.
Certainly a situation with higher stakes now, which is, again, to your point, pretty amazing. I thought we'd be going into Big 12 play talking about... You know, what has been the growth areas for Iowa State? What's, you know, how are the young players looking? Where's the, what do you try to do to get the most out of Big 12 play? Instead, it's like, how do you get to the NCAA tournament? And it's astounding that they're in this position. And we'll see right away if it's for real or not. Well, let me take that back. It is absolutely for real. We'll see if it's sustainable through an 18-game round-robin league schedule in the best league in the country. That is a totally different task, and I'm not saying it's harder, easier, or the same. It's just a different task than going 12-0 against the non-conference opponents that Iowa State has won every game of this season. It's just a very different challenge in navigating the scouting reports, in navigating just the rhythm of Tuesday, Saturday, Wednesday, Saturday games. That is a grind for these players and for these coaches, and the travel and everything on top of that. I am certain that Iowa State's defense is for real. The offense concerns me, and the question about when you're playing teams that are going to scout you as intricately as your conference opponents, Iowa State has 2 players that right now, if I'm a head coach in the Big 12, I don't guard beyond 18 feet, and that's going to make things really difficult for the rest of the Iowa State offense. difficult enough to not overcome? I don't know. We'll see. But it's just there's a that the offensive side is really interesting to me to see how that shakes out against the league play. And there might be some wrinkles that they can exploit. And, you know, I've obviously been the one hammering they can't shoot. But if you look at Iowa State's numbers, their three-point shooting, this is going to sound weird, and it is. The three-point shooting isn't that bad if you take out the two guys shooting the most threes. there's a lot of guys shooting 35, 40% on a small volume of threes. But then you look at Tyrese Hunter and Gabe Kalscher in the 20s, and they've taken the most threes of this team. Can you dial that? Can those guys, A, start making shots, or B, can you start dialing back their attempts and try to divert them either to two-point shots that they're better at or those three-point attempts to guys like Jazz Kunch, Caleb Grill, Isaiah Brockington, Trey Jackson that are shooting it well from beyond the arc? That'll be a question that I have.
I don't think you do too much with Tyrese Hunter. He's a freshman. He's played in 12 college games. You don't say, okay, you don't give the guys the green light at the beginning, 12 games into the season, which TJ has said he's done. You don't do that and then give him a yellow light. You don't, especially with a true freshman who's learning the game.
I don't disagree, but I do wonder about it because the teams are going to start going under screens on him, and that's going to make life difficult. Are you going to get a rover off of Gabe Kalscher, or is he going to be starting being guarded by like centers who will just stand in the middle of the paint, which is essentially an inverse box and one? That would be my concern.
Exactly, and very point well taken. I mean, like you said, Kalscher's got to start shooting it for Iowa State, you know, to continue this
to that unlock would, a new level.
That would, yeah, that offense. would yes.
And
that would,
again, like his value is greatest on the other side of the floor. He's right? An excellent defender. So you can stomach him not being a very good three-point shooter, frankly. Probably need to be better than, like, 20%.
You can stomach it if Iowa State's scoring three-pointers. And with Caleb Grill playing right now like he's playing, he's playing like he's never played before. I mean,
I tweeted this during the Chicago State game, I think, that, like, all of a sudden he's got some Nazmi Trulong vibes coming from him.
And that's awesome. Yes, exactly. That's with good hips. Wasn't Naz had his hip surgery? Yeah, his surgeries. But yeah, that's lending a great spark off the bench. Iowa State is Iowa State's had decent bench play throughout the year. I'm a little bit concerned if I'm an Iowa State fan of what's going on in the post though right now. I don't know where Robert Jones sits. As far as
on the bench last couple games,
that's what I mean. Yes, I don't know where he is in the rotation, the foundational level of what's going on there. And George Condit, we've all seen that he can be extremely foul prone. So
I think for Jones, some of it is certainly that Kunch has established himself as a really solid player, maybe even an integral component, and he's taken those center minutes because Ina Runa's had some nice moments too. So I think, you know, Jones's relegation to fewer minutes has as much to do with Jazz as it does, I think, anything else, in my opinion.
And Jazz has been so fun to watch. I mean, he's my favorite Cyclone, other than George. I like George. But Jazz, my gosh. I mean, you've known this for as long as you know me. I'm a body language guy. I like to watch these guys' body language. I think you can tell a lot from it. And with Jazz, there was one time when he was diving for a loose. No, he was shooting a three pointer on our end of the floor to our left, shooting a three pointer. He got whacked into the whoever they were playing opponent bench. He's laying on the floor and he's looking. He's put his hands behind his bed and behind his head and he starts laughing as he's looking at the ceiling. I mean, this is the kind of personality that's really kind of cool. I just like to sit and talk with him sometimes, just to, you know, even without a microphone, just to pick his brain on stuff, just to get to know him a little bit.
Be interesting to hear how his Kansas Christmas went. Spent Kansas right with the Grill family, obviously not wanting to go back to Slovakia for 2 days or whatever it was. That'll be interesting.
Were his parents not in town at some point?
I believe I saw them last week.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and then who else? Tristan went to
Minneapolis.
Minneapolis, yeah, for with Kelscher. So yeah, that could bring up a whole another segment here.
Which I think we'll probably have to get into here in the next segment.
Okay, we'll get it into yeah. the next segment. We'll keep everybody hanging on that one. But yeah, I mean, Hilton's going to be crazy. Students or no students. I mean, there won't be any, obviously, people won't be camping out like they have, to get into games like this in the past. But this is a game, a huge game that I didn't even think that Iowa State would have any huge games this year. But when Iowa State beat Iowa soundly by 20 points, soundly, I mean, it wasn't a runaway thing at the end. That showed me something right there. And yeah, I know Iowa's not great this year, but nonetheless, that still showed me something right there.
You're listening to the Cyclone Insider Radio Hour from the Des Moines Register here on 106.3 FM and 1460 KXNO. When we come back, we'll talk more about the top 10 matchup at Hilton Coliseum this weekend between number 8 Iowa State and number 1 Baylor.
Everything you need to know about Iowa State, it's Cyclone Insider with the Des Moines Register on 1460 KXNO.
Welcome back to the Cyclone Insider Radio Hour from the Des Moines Register. He's Randy Peterson, and I'm Travis Hines. Spent the last segment talking about Iowa State-Baylor. I think the elephant in the room as you look across the country is, what impact is COVID going to have on these January schedules? I think the answer is obvious at this point that it's going to be an immense disruption. Maybe not quite as widespread as we saw last season or have even seen this year, as we've seen the CDC cut its quarantine guidance from 10 days to 5. That'll make it easier for teams that do have to hit a pause to get back into things. But as you've had so many of these programs send their kids home for the holidays and now come back, I think we're seeing, with the new transmissibility of the Omicron variant, I can't believe these are the words we're talking about on a sports show, but here we are, the Omicron variant.
Omicron variant and 12-0.
Yeah, that it'll be disruptive. From our understanding, the testing regimen for Iowa State has basically been non-existent because they have vaccinated players. That if you're vaccinated, you're only being tested if you're symptomatic or then you'll become a close contact of someone. Our understanding is that will remain the system as players come back. I think they got back 2 days ago. That unless you're symptomatic, you're not getting tested, which would seem to lessen the likelihood that Iowa State will be in a pause unless somebody actually does get sick. So the game Saturday seems to be in pretty good shape. We'll find out. Again, as we've talked about now for going on 2 years, it is what it is until it ain't. And so we'll see what happens. But it seems like Iowa State, with its high vaccination rates, we'll see, if they're able to weather this. Again, I don't know about the booster situation. We saw Alabama football coach Nick Saban come out and say, I think 100% of Alabama has gotten their booster shots already. Like, eventually this is, and eventually is now, I guess, is that that's just a competitive advantage. So we'll see, if teams adopt that thought going forward.
And I agree with you. And like you and I have talked the last couple of evenings here in Orlando, there's going to be 14,700 or 14,300, whatever it is, people in Hilton Coliseum on Saturday. Not just Hilton, but at basketball arenas all over the country. How many of those people do you think are going to be wearing masks?
In Hilton Coliseum?
Mm-hmm.
Probably under 500.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, but I think that's the...
And I'm not being political or anything. I'm just stating a fact here, is that with everything going on, It's possible. It's possible not only with players, but it's possible for fans. Also, it's a risky deal.
Yeah, I think
you're putting a lot of faith into the vaccinations and the boosters.
It's obvious that there are not consistencies when we're talking about pausing sports, pausing teams, and then having multiple thousands of people in an enclosed space for 3 hours. I think it's fair to point out that there's some inconsistencies there. But at this point, I don't know that much is going to change.
Nothing's going to change. They're not going to go through another season like they did last year.
No, and they can't. There is no, there's not the built-in flexibility there was last year. Now, they could, you know, swing things on the fly, but there's not that built-in week at the end of the year that Iowa State had or the Big 12
had. How many athletic department budgets can handle it either?
I saw today that Eastern Carolina is trying to raise money to offset its losses from its bowl game getting canceled. They had one donor already write a $200,000 check to cover the costs already spent to get ready for a bowl game that never happened. So, like, there's going to be financial strain here. Does it reach up into the Big 12 level? Probably to a much smaller degree than that, but it is notable that that's the level that these cancellations can impact these athletic departments.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to do everything they can to have fans everywhere. NCAA can't take another hit. Big 12 can't take another hit. Schools can't take another hit. I just hope they do it. And so far, they have, and I can't, you know, I can't speak against it, but with reason. And like I said, they will. I think. I don't know what the vaccination numbers are as far as the general public is concerned, but I'm assuming anybody that goes to Iowa, I assume the 14,300, whatever it be, I'm assuming 60% of those people will have been vaccinated, maybe. Like I said, I don't look at those numbers. I do not. I don't even watch the news anymore. I'm tired of seeing, starting off with the news, the damn COVID numbers, you know, how many people are in the hospital, how many people aren't in the hospital, all this stuff. I'm just tired of it. I'm tired of bad news.
So yeah, if you ignore it, it doesn't exist. That's the thought.
That's not true. But there's enough bad news in the world that I switch over to Andy Griffith or something. I don't know.
Well, the good news for Iowa State is that I do think, when you're talking about just X's and O's here in basketball, that there is a real path to the NCAA tournament, and
right.
It starts on Saturday. If you're able to get a win like that against Baylor. I mean, I think Iowa State is going to be a significant underdog against Baylor, but let's say they are to win. Are you talking about your number one ranked Iowa State Cyclones on Sunday? I mean, you're number eight in the country. You beat the number one team. You're going to have a significant jump.
You're
going to
jump.
And even if you lose, you know, it's whatever. But I do think, again, we've talked about this before, I think it's the race to seven for Iowa State. And maybe that's
right.
Underselling.
Yeah.
That could very well be underselling them. Obviously, everybody whiffed on how good this team would be through its first 12 games. So if I'm underselling them at trying to get to seven, you know, my apologies to the basketball program. But I think if you can get to seven,
that'd be six Big 12 victories and Missouri, right?
No, I'm talking seven Big 12.
Okay,
victories.
So then you got to beat Missouri,
or you lose to Missouri. I don't think it matters. Missouri's pretty bad. You probably beat Missouri regardless.
Yeah.
But I think if you get to seven,
you beat Missouri, you get seven Big 12. You're at 20. You're in.
Yeah, and I think. Given what we've seen from the league, seven will not be easy. But I think, given what we've seen through 12 games, it's doable for Iowa State.
Especially if they beat Baylor. But look at the month of January. I mean, they play all the good teams in the month of January, and it's
as of now they're on KenPom, which I know some people don't like to talk about, but they're the underdog in their first six
exactly.
games.
Yeah,
so that's a statement. Not only that's a statement about how good the league is, more than about Iowa State.
Yeah. And they play at Oklahoma during this time. They play at Kansas during. They play at Kansas during this time. Yeah, they play at Kansas during this time. Where else? At Texas Tech during this. They play at Texas the first part of February. So, but yeah, you're right. I don't look at KenPom as much as I do the ESPN. Predictor, but the ESPN predictor has Iowa State the underdog in six of those games. So, and you're right, it does speak to the Big 12. But so let's talk about Saturday just for a second. I'm saying, and I'm probably not going out there on a limb, obviously, but low scoring game.
Yeah.
How's Iowa State score? And we talked about how's Iowa State score in the Cheez It Bowl. How's Iowa State score?
Then again, I'm going to talk more about Baylor. Like, what I'm going to say now is more about Baylor than it is Iowa State. I mean, I watched Baylor a few times this year. That defense is hellacious. I cannot believe how good that defense is, given what the Scott Drew lost of last year's national championship team. It is aggressive. It is coherent. It is fluid. It is just one of the more impressive defenses I can remember seeing in the last few years. And it is going to cause everybody problems. I mean, they held Villanova to, what, 36 points? Villanova's one of the best offenses in the country. And they absolutely sputtered in the mud against Baylor. So, I mean, is this a game where Iowa State struggles to crack 40 points? Is it a game where they struggle to crack 50 points? I could see that.
We've seen them struggle to score 50 points against a bad team.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the Iowa State's going to have... They're going to need some shooting. They're going to need some scorers. And I don't know where that is. Brockington's going to score. He can get his points from his mid-range thing.
And if you can get some production from Enaruna and Kunj, I think that goes a long way.
Yeah, I was just going to say that, yeah.
Is this Caleb Grills shooting here to stay?
I think that's for real. But we'll see, because they will have been off since Lord knows when. How are they going to – in over a week, obviously. When was the last game?
Sunday, so it'll have been 13 days between games. No, they played on the 22nd, Tuesday the 22nd against Chicago.
I think Baylor's played since then, actually. How are they going to be coming off of that, for example?
We'll find out. It is as tough a test as you could possibly have to start Big 12 play, but through 12 tests, Iowa State has aced them all. 12-0, number 8 in the country, with number 1 undefeated. Similarly undefeated, Baylor coming to Hilton Coliseum. Be sure to check out DesMoinesRegister.com and the paper for all your coverage needs of that top 10 matchup in Hilton Coliseum, as well as Wednesday's Cheez-It Bowl between the Iowa State Cyclones and the Clemson Tigers. For Randy Peterson, I'm Travis Hines. This has been the Cyclone Insider Radio Hour from the Des Moines Register on 106.3 FM and 1460 KXNO.